We continue to have problems with the court's charge. This term, the Supreme Court only had a couple of cases. We're going to look at those. At the end of last year, though, after this program, we got about three or four new. They'll be at the end of the program to talk about. But again, it sort of emphasized to me some of the things that started in the 90s that began to cause us problems and how the court has started to work through those. First one is the Payne rule. You remember Payne. It's 1992, but remember what had happened. We had just come out over a period of time in which the court had been more plaintiffs-oriented than it had been in decades previously. In the late 70s or the mid 80s, we had Pennzoil versus Texaco. We then had the CBS 60 Minutes show. Things were about to change. And that court that did Payne was a mixed court, and it came up with one great theory we all ought to remember. There should be but one test for determining if a party has preserved error, and that is whether the party made the trial court aware of the complaint timely and plainly. Now, up until that time, what the court had done is written a couple of opinions and in speeches like this had told the practicing bar, we think there are probably only a dozen people in the state that know how to properly submit and object to a charge. The late, great Rusty McMaines knew he was one of the 12 and was convinced the Bill Dorsanio wasn't. At the same time, Dorsanio was convinced that actually McMaines had it wrong and he really had the inside key. But the truth of the matter is it had proved hard. And at that time, we were looking at cases with verdicts over $1 million, we're finding charge error at the Supreme Court roughly at an 80% rate. And this was a change. Remember, here's what happened. Payne's a remarkable case, and it plays to go back and think about it again. Plaintiff sued after he fell into a culvert. The charge submitted a special defect. The state objected that the charge removed questions of whether it was a special defect or a premises defect from the jury. Wait a minute. That's a question of law for the trial court. Did that preserve anything? Surely not. And then the second thing is, you got to submit that the plaintiff had actual knowledge that the culvert was there. What did that do? Not a whole lot on the eventual issue on appeal. Here's what the Payne said. The request made no difference. Whether to grant it or not absolutely was irrelevant to what we were considering about. Instead, we needed to know whether the objection alerted the trial court that something was wrong. And why did this request saying the plaintiff had actual knowledge of the culvert make a difference? It was one of four elements of a premises defect charge. That's how far the court reached to reach a charge error case. It was one element, the three others weren't submitted. And that, in an objection to the court's charge, said you should, what the remedy is, you should have submitted premises defect. Pretty amazing. Can you imagine that opinion now on what we've seen? Probably not. Payne was expanded. In Tkachuk, the court held that a pretrial hearing on drainage issues in an oil and gas case preserved error. Wack and Hutt did the same thing on a spoliation instruction that happened before the evidence started. And each of these preserved jury error. It looked like maybe the court was meaning what it was saying at this point, and we all were happy. Then, in 2012, comes Cruz versus Andrews Restoration. This is 20 years after Payne, almost to the day, and we got a different result. The issue was whether there was an omission of question of trial attorney's fees from the court's charge. This has happened to all of us if you've done enough charges. What happened is this nice man was trying a lawsuit, submitted appellate fees, but forgot to submit and include, although he had it in his pretrial stuff, the trial attorney's fees, and it just wasn't there. There was no charge conference objection. They had waived the reading of the charge, so he didn't catch it there. He claimed his pretrial charge, which including the missing question, did it. Here's what the Supreme Court says. Requests have to come after the trial court submits the charge to the parties. That's Rule 274. That's precisely what it says. But it hadn't changed in 50 years, and it was in Payne, and there wasn't an objection. It was in Tkachuk, and there wasn't an objection. And it was in Whackenhut, and there wasn't one. Pretrial submission might work, the court said, if you went ahead and called it to the court's attention. Well, wait a minute. That can't quite be right. Under Rule 278, the party with the burden of proof has the burden to submit. So pointing out to, I object, you didn't include what was in my pretrial charge, does that work? Well, the answer is, Cruz indicated that it did, and in Fort Worth Independent School District versus Palazzolo, I think is how you pronounce it, that is exactly what the Fort Worth court said, and said if you call the court's attention, show it to them and get a written ruling.